If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
There were two major criminal cases in the news. Filmmaker Harvey Weinstein's sex abuse case is being retried in New York courtroom, and the Menendez brothers, who were convicted of killing their parents 35 years ago, have been granted a new sentencing hearing. And with us to break down the legalities is a regular on WGN, Damon Sharonis, one of the finest criminal defense attorneys in Chicago, founder of Sharonis and Parente. He's a fierce advocate for people charged with federal white-collar violent crimes, drug and sex crimes. He's been involved in some of the country's most high-profile cases. Damon, thank you so much for joining me on this Easter Sunday. How are you?
I'm well, Karen. Happy Easter. Thanks for having me.
So you represented Harvey Weinstein in his first trial, which was 5 years ago. Wow. Can you just remind our listeners who may have forgotten, like, who he is and what he, you know, what he accomplished, and how high profile a person he was?
Sure. I mean, he was for a long time considered one of the most prolific and successful producers in Hollywood. He started the Miramax company. He created and produced Quentin Tarantino's movies, Good Will Hunting, movies that won, you know, hundreds of Oscars. And he was pretty much one of the most famous and successful producers of the 21st century in Hollywood.
Now, what were the allegations and the accusations in the first trial, and what was your defense to those allegations?
Sure. He was charged with sexual assault. There were three alleged victims who were charged in the case, and then the court allowed a number of other witnesses to come in as sort of proof of other crimes witnesses. Our defense was that any encounter that occurred was consensual, and certainly the state could not prove beyond a reasonable doubt that it wasn't. So we had quite a bit of ammunition for that by way of continued communication with them, text messages, loving emails, things like that. So, the defense was consent for the most part. And some of the other crimes witnesses, we just argued that there was no proof this even occurred.
Did you have a chance to talk to the jury after the verdict?
No, we didn't talk to them, but they had no problem talking to news outlets. So we had a little bit of an idea of sort of where they were coming from. And there was a lot of issues with the jury selection in that case that was problematic that we raised on appeal. But because it was reversed on other grounds, we didn't get to that. But we were not allowed to speak to them.
So now he was found guilty. Was it of two charges? And he was acquitted on some others. Is that right?
Yeah, he was acquitted of the probably the most serious charge, which was the actress Annabella Sciorra, who had made an accusation against him, and he was found guilty of two other charges. Jessica Mann and Miriam Halei were the other two accusers in that case. He was acquitted of one of the Jessica Mann charges, but essentially he had two charges he was convicted of.
And he was sentenced to 23 years, and his case was reversed on appeal. And you called this, because I remember talking to you after the trial, or even during the trial I may have spoken to you, and you were saying, hey, the judge is letting in evidence, this is going to be reversed. You called it. So can you explain as clearly as you can, and this kind of goes against the grain, it goes against common sense, but can you try to explain why the appellate court reversed the conviction?
Yeah, well, the judge in our case, who's no longer a judge, he was removed from the bench, was letting anything in that the state wanted. He was really a prosecutor in a robe during the trial. And the reason that, and the law in New York's different than the law in Illinois, we had argued that by allowing all these other crimes evidence, all these other accusations in, it was just going to overwhelm the jury. It really wasn't relevant to the charges in this case, and it was going to be offered for propensity. And you know what that means, Karen. It means if he allegedly did it before, then he probably did it again. And it took away from the jury's ability to focus on the actual allegations. And you got to remember, they already had three witnesses in one trial who were going to testify. So to now add in four other accusers, that amongst other problems with the court's rulings, the Supreme Court of New York had a lot of guts and said, no, this isn't the law. This isn't fair. We are not going to let this conviction stand because the court just wasn't an honest gatekeeper in the case. He let in everything but the kitchen sink and deprived Mr. Weinstein of a fair trial.
And, you know, a lot of people cringe when you say these kind of things because it's you're right, exactly what you said. If somebody, did this over and over again and you bring everyone in to say that he did it, doesn't that mean that he's more likely to have done it to another woman? But I think the law is, wants to really strain to give a fair trial to somebody and say, we want you to judge this on the allegations only as to the victims that are that he's accused of harming. And, it's sort of like I always use the example of like I steal the lunch from Bob Surratt, Bob Surratt's lunch from the refrigerator at WGN. Well, if I'm on trial for that, you don't get to bring in that I shoplifted in grade school, that I stole a pencil from a hotel desk or anything like that, because those are irrelevant to the issue of did I steal the sandwich. And I think if you kind of look at it that way, it makes a little more sense. Maybe you have a better example.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And if you do get arrested on those charges, Karen, I would be happy to represent you pro bono.
And you know, it was consensual. It was consensual because Bob did offer his salami sandwich to me. So just saying.
I'm not going to touch that one.
No.
But, I will say trials are not about just reputations, right? And people, we're not trying a case on TMZ or, in the newspaper. And all of these people who are complaining about it, well, what if somebody they love or one of their family members or they were accused of something? Would they want, something they did in high school or college to come in? No. And again, New York is different, right? In Illinois, there are different laws which actually allow, some evidence to come in for propensity in sexual assault cases. But in New York, they don't allow that. And that's the reason it was kept out. And, the judge just, I think, it was sort of, the queen of hearts. We said, off with his head and then we'll have the trial. And that's what happened. And I called it because it was clear to call, right? I mean, it was a basic violation. So we're very, very happy. And I know he is because he's picking a jury right now in New York for his second trial.
When we come back, I want to talk briefly about what the new trial adds to the mix. And then I want to get on to the Menendez brothers, which is fascinating. We're talking to Damon Chironis here. Damon, what's your contact information if anyone has stolen a sandwich or allegedly stolen a sandwich and needs some really good representation?
The best way to get me is you can just find me on my website. It's www.chironislaw.com.
We're talking to Damon Chironis, one of the best criminal defense attorneys in the country. He represented Harvey Weinstein in his first trial. And I just want to wrap up, Damon, this new trial that's starting this week. He's selecting a jury. How are the allegations in this case different from the ones that you tried?
Sure. So two of the witnesses are going to testify, Ms. Mann and Ms. Halei. And then there's a third accuser who was charged in the case. There was a new indictment. Her name has not been, I don't know who it is. Her name has not been made public yet. So there's three witnesses. I do not believe there is the type of other crimes evidence that was problematic in the last case. So he's going to have a much smaller universe of charges to defend against. There's certainly a blueprint from, sort of the work we did. Some of the same lawyers are on the case. So it's a more narrow case. The issues are more narrow. The accusations are more narrow. It's not sort of anything goes.
And, of course, picking a jury is probably even more problematic now because his name is synonymous with sexual harassment and Me Too movement, et cetera.
It is and it isn't. When we tried that case in Manhattan, of all places, right, it was the height of the Me Too movement, literally the height. For better or worse, I think over the last 5 years, and certainly for people accused of these types of crimes, I think it's gotten better. I think that the outlook and sort of the furor over that has died down a little bit, and I think he may actually be in a position to get a more fair trial. There's actually been some news sources recently who have been doing stories on the case and really deep diving into the evidence and basically saying what we've been saying all along, that if you actually look at the facts of this case, you will see that these allegations are very defensible. So we'll see. But you're right, jury selection in this case is everything. I've been talking to the lawyers. I've been consulting on the case. Jury selection is going well so far. They're happy with the judge. So far, I think they've got 9 jurors and paneled. They're going to finish that up tomorrow and then start opening statements on Tuesday.
Interesting. Well, you can come back and talk about the results. Eric and Lyle Menendez were convicted 35 years ago of murdering their parents in Beverly Hills. They were tried, a jury was hung, and they were convicted on the second trial and sentenced to life. You know, there's been a lot of stuff going on. There was a prior DA in Los Angeles who advocated for them being released due to their rehabilitation, due to the nature of their allegations that they were sexually abused by their father. But he was elected out of office. So now the new DA is not in favor of that. So this week or last week, we heard that they were going to get a resentencing. Damon, how did that arise?
So there is a law in California that allows courts to sort of recall and resentence inmates if the original sentence is, you know, longer or too long in the interest of justice or too harsh. So that's sort of the mechanism to get into court. And you're right, there's been back and forth. Is it political that the prior state's attorney wanted to reduce it? You know, there's been this huge sort of wave of TikTok supporters for the Menendezes. So the issue now really becomes what the initial prosecutor asked for was maybe a reduction in sentence to where they would have to serve between 50 years and life. But sort of the key to that is because they were under 26 at the time the crimes were committed, they would be eligible for parole immediately, and then they would still have to go in front of the parole board. So it's not the final step, but it gives them an opportunity to get another bite at the apple and present, you know, all of the great things they've done while they were in prison, all of the rehabilitation they've done. And certainly it looks like this prosecutor, unlike the last one, he's a former federal U.S. attorney, he says that the Menendez brothers have not fully taken responsibility for their crime, so he is opposing it. So it's setting up for what could be a pretty significant clash in court between the defense lawyers and the prosecution over what should be done.
And it seems to me from what the judge said, and I'm just reading between the lines, that the judge was more interested in the question of whether they are rehabilitated after all these years, as opposed to maybe we should have heard more evidence about the alleged sex abuse by the father. Is that fair from what you have seen?
I think so. I think there's a lot of problems with digging all of that stuff back up. You know, the jury heard it. They exhausted their state court appeals. You know, I don't think the judge wants to retry that. I know there's been some sort of new evidence put forward by way of letters that were found, although I really dispute whether that's new evidence. But he is focusing on what the California law really allows for. Is this sentence too harsh? Have they been rehabilitated? What types of things have they done? And by all accounts, they've been model prisoners, they've gotten their education, they've helped people. And the question is, does that wash away, you know, two significant murders? And I think that is where the defense attorneys would be able to maybe introduce other mitigating circumstances and maybe fashion them as mitigating circumstances. And if they're allowed to do that, then they can get back into, I think, the sexual abuse allegations and all that other stuff. So it's really fascinating. And it's a polarizing topic. I mean, a lot of people have pretty strong opinions about that, as you can imagine, based on just the horrific nature of the crimes.
Absolutely. And just quickly, you know, I know it's hard to second guess and to say this, but, you know, if this case were tried today and there were the allegations that the father was guilty of sexual abuse, would that have been allowed in? Would that have been considered more strongly by the jury? Do you have a feeling of that? Is this a different time back 35 years ago that these types of things were not considered?
Absolutely. I mean, I think we can all, in the 35 years since this has happened, certainly there's been advances and people realize that, you know, men can be sexually abused, right? That can happen. You know, I think it really goes more to me to whether or not this was like a second degree murder than a sheer self-defense. I think the jury had a hard time. In the first trial, I think there was more evidence of the sexual assaults and sexual abuse that was allowed in. In the second trial, I think there was less of that. But if everything was true, if the Menendez brothers were telling the truth about what occurred, I don't know. I wasn't there. I don't have an answer to that. But could that raise to the level of second-degree murder? Yeah, and they'd be out by now if that were the case. So it's certainly relevant, and it's all for the finder of fact, the trier of fact, to decide how relevant it is. Does it raise to the level of self-defense? Is it a mitigating circumstance that leads to second-degree murder? But, yeah, I think it is absolutely a relevant portion of their defense and maybe the only part of their defense that they have.
One final question. Do you think that the Menendez brothers are going to testify in the sentencing hearing?
I haven't thought about that. I would see no, I would not be hesitant to put them on and to have them testify. They're both articulate. They are both apparently have done wonderful things since they've been locked up. You know, some people get life sentences and that's it. They play dominoes and do nothing. These guys, from what I've read, have done a lot of great things for other inmates in there. So is it necessary? No. Do I think it would hurt them? Probably not. It depends on what the government would be allowed to cross them on. But that's an interesting question. I'm sure we'll see May 9th or soon enough when it's up.
Damon Charonis, thank you so much for taking time on your holiday to talk to us. Damon Charonis, one of the best criminal defense lawyers here in Chicago. Why don't you give out your contact information?
Sure. It's www.cheronislaw.com. And I'm easy to find. Karen, thanks again. It's always a pleasure.